It's not entirely clear from the gospel accounts exactly what the relationship was between John the Baptist and Jesus. They are often thought to be cousins of some description, based on the assumption that Mary, Jesus' mother, and Elizabeth, John's mother, were cousins. But the actual Greek word that describes Mary and Elizabeth's relationship is simply kinswomen. They were kinswomen. They were somehow related. It's not clear from the texts exactly how they were related. But regardless, it appears that John and Jesus must have known each other, that they perhaps grew up side by side, that they were perhaps on friendly terms throughout their childhood. But it certainly appears from their adult lives, what little we know of their relationship in adult life, is that they were people who respected each other. They had a sense of honor and reverence for one another, certainly John for Jesus, but even Jesus for John, coming to him and submitting to his baptism out in the wilderness. That they had a relationship of mutual admiration for one another. John was the one, it would appear, who was the first to really recognize the gravity and significance of Jesus' arrival. He was the one who had the insight and the vision to point forward to the coming of Jesus and to alert people to his arrival and to the extraordinary event that was taking place in their midst. So it's hard not to imagine what Jesus' feelings must have been when the news came to him that John, his colleague in ministry, this truth teller, that John had been, according to Matthew's account, put in prison. Especially since John's imprisonment was desperately unjust. He had contravened absolutely no law of the land. He was not a criminal. He was guilty only of having told the truth. He was arrested after having accused Herod Antipas, rebuking him, Herod Antipas, for divorcing his wife and having an illicit relationship with his sister-in-law, Herodias, a relationship that was curtailed by the laws of their own religious system. So all John had done was tell the truth, and all the thanks he got was being thrown in jail by a tyrannous, despotic ruler. Jesus must have felt devastated by this turn. He could only have imagined where this was leading, and indeed, as you know the story, it led to the death of John the Baptist. So what do you want Jesus to do at this point in the story? I mean, Jesus, we're told in our gospel reading at the conclusion of our gospel reading this morning, is a person who preached good news, the good news of the kingdom, and who was able to cure every disease and every sickness among the nations. Jesus was a person who could feed thousands with a few small loaves and fishes. Jesus was a person who, we're told in the stories, could walk on water and raise the dead. So when he hears that his colleague John has been thrown in prison, what do you want? I mean, I don't know what you want him to do, but what I want him to do is I want him to storm into the city and blast the gates of the prison and set John free. I mean, there is a little tiny bit of precedence, although, I mean, I guess a precedence can't be a precedence when it hasn't happened yet, but later on in the Acts of the Apostles, we'll find in Acts chapter 12 that Peter is miraculously set free from prison by the power of God. So why wouldn't Jesus do the same thing for this noble, truth-teller, unjustly accused friend and maybe family member, John the Baptist. And the one thing, I think, that above all we don't want Jesus to do is what we're told he did. Matthew says, "Now, when Jesus heard that John had been arrested, he withdrew." Seems kind of a bit of a letdown, doesn't it? I mean, here's Jesus with all this power, all this ability, and he hears that his friend and colleague and maybe family member, John the Baptist, has been imprisoned, and he just kind of slinks off to Galilee. It's kind of what I want to do when things don't go the way I think they should. You know, I want to hide under my bed. I want to withdraw. I want to close my eyes and think, it's not really like that out there in the world. I want to shut my ears and not hear the terrible stories of pain and injustice and heartache and environmental disaster that we seem to be surrounded by. We all, at times, it seems to me, want to do what it appears Jesus did, to just withdraw from the suffering, perhaps, of our own situation, those of the people we know, or the wider world around us. When he heard that John had been arrested, Jesus withdrew to Galilee. But there might be another way of understanding this withdrawal. The Greek word has its root in the Greek koareo. And koareo means, you're going to love this, I love it. Koareo means to have space or something, to receive something. When Jesus heard that John the Baptist had been arrested, he made space. He received the news. He held that suffering. He held those feelings of pain and anger. I would like to suggest, and you know, maybe I'm winging out here, but that Jesus did, in fact, what Job's friends at first did before they started spinning wildly out of control. So Job's situation is described in the first chapter of the book of Job, and in the beginning of chapter 2. He is suffering incredible anguish. He's a righteous, virtuous man, and all of a sudden his whole life is thrown into turmoil, and everything has gone wrong, and he seems to have lost everything that made his life worthwhile and meaningful. And then his friends come. And the writer says, "Now when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that had come upon Job, they came each from his own place, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite. They made an appointment together to come to show him sympathy and comfort him. And when they saw him from a distance, they did not recognize him. And they raised their voices and wept. And they tore their robes and sprinkled dust on their heads toward heaven. And they sat with him on the ground 7 days and seven nights. And no one spoke a word to him. For they saw his suffering was very great." Isn't that great? That's actually what you want when you're suffering. You want someone who will just come and hold the pain with you. Sadly, if you know the story, it goes downhill from here. And Job's friends begin to try to explain the whole situation and make sense of it and tell him why he's done something wrong and why he's being punished for his sins. But they start out in exactly the right place. They come to him and they share his pain and they stop and they sit with him in the midst of that darkness. I heard a story just after Christmas of a young person who had a younger family member die on the morning of Boxing Day. And the person who was telling me this story told me of a conversation they had overheard where someone came to the person whose much younger sibling had died on Boxing Day. And they said to this bereaved person, "I'm so sorry to hear about the death of your sibling." Perfect, right? That's all you need to do. And then the comforter said to the bereaved, "But at least you had Christmas together." He's going, "Seriously? What just happened here?" What happened was the speaker was feeling the other person's pain and couldn't bear it, and wanted to try desperately to find some way to make it feel better so they would feel better, because they couldn't bear it. But that's not what the Bible does. The Bible bears the pain. Have you ever read the book of Psalms? The book of Psalms is full of pain. Read sometime when you're feeling in a happy mood and you want to fix it. Read Psalm 88, where the psalmist says to God, "You have caused my companions to shun me. I'm feeling lonely and I'm feeling rejected. You have made me a thing of horror to them. Nobody likes me. Everybody hates me. I am shut in so that I cannot escape. My eyes grow dim through sorrow. Every day I call on you, O Lord. I spread out my hands to you. Do you work wonders for the dead? Do the shades rise up to praise you? But I, O Lord, cry out to you. In the morning my prayer comes before you. O Lord, why do you cast me off? Why do you hide your face from me? Wretched and close to death from my youth up, I suffer your terrors. I am desperate." This is in your Bible. Right in the middle section. You go look sometime. All of the pain, all of the sorrow, and all of the anguish of the world. And it's just hell. It's just there. It's interesting to me in our two readings this morning, there's a slight tweak in the quote that Matthew uses from Isaiah. So we read it first in the Isaiah version, in Isaiah chapter 9, verse 2, where Isaiah says, "The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light." But in Matthew's version, it changes just slightly. One word. Matthew has Isaiah say, "The people who sat darkness have seen a great light." They both have in the darkness, but in one they're walking, and in the other they're just sitting there in the darkness, just willing to embrace the painful, difficult, harsh realities of life. And it's there where we find the light. It's not when we try to fix things. Jesus did not fix John the Baptist's situation. Jesus didn't make it all better. Jesus didn't storm the gates of the prison. Jesus didn't liberate this unjustly accused friend, colleague, family member. He let that pain be there, and he knew where it was going, and we all know where it went. John was beheaded. John was executed with no justice, with no mercy, with no forgiveness. Jesus held that in his heart. And I think what we need to see here is that this is not a counsel for despair. It's not a counsel for defeat. Because Jesus, we're told, having heard of John's imprisonment, having held the sorrow and the brokenness and the darkness of that reality, we're told the next thing that he did was that he walked by the Sea of Galilee and saw two brothers, Simon, who's called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, "Follow me." Jesus went, and I'm serious about this, Jesus went and found some buddies. He found people to be with him. Do you remember the Garden of Gethsemane? Jesus is in anguish, pained and broken. What does he ask his disciples to do? Fix it? Make it better? Make it all nice? He just says, "Watch with me. Stay awake and be with me. Because I'm feeling alone and broken. And what I want is another human presence. I don't want an answer. I just want you to be here with me. I don't want you to make it better. You can't anyway." And when we do that, I think what we discover, Jesus says to them, "Follow me." And what will happen? "I will make you fish for people." I've always had a hard time with that image. You know, I don't know anything about fishing, really. But I kind of have this image of throwing a hook into the river with fake bait on it, and the fish getting it hooked in the top of his mouth, and getting yanked out of the ocean or the river, and flopping on the bottom of my boat, and me clubbing it on its head, and it dying. "And I will make you club people to death." I don't think that's what we're supposed to see when Jesus said he would make his followers fishers of people. I think what we're supposed to see is the image of a net that is thrown into the water and draws the fish together. That's the part we're supposed to take from that image. When we are able to hold the sorrow and the brokenness of our own lives and the sadness and fragility of the world around us, then others will be drawn together. Their hearts will open, and we will find in one another's company the strength and the power and the light of God's presence. You know, there's a lot of fear going on in our day and age. Fear about viruses, fear about environmental devastation, fear about terrorism, fear about guns. The fear just seems to go on and on. We are a people who are called to hold the pain, but not the fear. Yeah, the world's broken. Yeah, we've messed things up mightily. When we hold the pain, we will find one another. And when we find one another, we will make better choices and create a better world. It'll just happen. I don't know what John and Andrea have been doing inside my head all week, but that's where they've been, it turns out. And so every song we sang this morning touched on this issue, it seems to me. But one in particular, I'm wondering if we might sing again, "Find Me in the River." Can we do that? Because, you know, this is what you want to do. You just want to be there in the midst of those torrents, in the midst of that swirling, in the midst of environmental chaos and devastation and viral infections and the world that is raging around us. You just want to be willing to stop, stand there, and bear all of that and know that it can be born. And that's where the light begins to shine. So let's sing this song. Thank you.